Salesmen are rarely heroic figures in American culture. They're often shown as sad, defeated people, like Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman, who says,
"It's funny, you know, after all the highways and the trains and the appointments and the years, you end up worth more dead than alive."
Or slick, unscrupulous characters like Ricky Roman, Glengarry Glen Ross. But then that's a David Mamet play, so it's hard to repeat any line. Yet sales drive the economy. The cleverest invention or product will disappear, creating no income, no employment, unless someone can sell it. Philip Delves Broughton was a world-roving reporter for the Daily Telegraph of London, but he left journalism for Harvard Business School, where he was astonished to discover most MBA programs teach nothing about sales. Mr. Broughton decided to find out on his own. His new book is The Art of the Sale, Learning from the Masters About the Business of Life. Philip Delves Broughton joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Haven't Americans long held some contradictory views about selling?
Yes, they have. And you mentioned Willie Loman and Glengarry Glen Ross, and that's the sort of negative view. But the much more positive one is the sort of log cabin to the White House view, the idea that in a essentially flat, very democratic society, if you can sell, if you can persuade others of your abilities, you can essentially rise up. You look at the entrepreneurial heroes, whether it's Donald Trump's or the Steve Jobs's, they're all great salesmen in their way, and they're difficult and contradictory characters. But what really marks them out is their ability to persuade us that whatever they have is worth buying. So it's both heroic and depressing. And again, that's what really drew me in, this story of capitalism, the Willie Loman, the defeated man who's become nothing but a tool of the economy. On the other hand, if you can sell, you can really triumph in an essentially flat and democratic society.
I guess I didn't quite understand until you put it this bluntly in your book that, like baseball players, the best salespeople spend most of their time striking out.
Yes, and that's why it's so important to be optimistic and tenacious. It's a career where you are rejected many, many more times than you're accepted. And a lot of the really good salesmen thrive on that, knowing that at some point there will be a triumph, and that triumph is going to be what validates everything they do. As you said, like baseball players, hitting 300 would be tremendous in sales. Hitting 1 out of 100 is tremendous in many kinds of sales. So to really succeed at it, you have to understand the odds. You have to understand that you're going to be told no more than yes. And that's very, very hard, and that's psychologically hard. And again, that's one of the things that drew me in. Business can often seem sterile, about numbers, about spreadsheets, about strategic reports. But sales makes it really human. It cuts to the heart of who we are, what we're willing to do to make a buck, the masks we're willing to adopt, and our ability to persuade. One salesman told me that sales is the greatest laboratory there is for studying human nature, and I completely agree. And that's the antithesis of much of what we think about business.
And what do you learn in that lab?
You learn the most fundamental things about human nature. You know, I say at the end of the book, I talk about the lemonade stand as a great American rite of passage. You know, why is it we encourage our children to go up at the end of our driveways and sell lemonade? A sales trainer asked me this interesting question at one point. He said, "What do you most want for your children?" I have 2 young sons who are 6 and 9. And I said, I want them to be happy. I want them to have great relationships, have great work, and all these things. And he said, no, one thing. And I said, okay, I give up. What is it? He said, if you were to die tomorrow, you would want for them to be able to take care of their needs, to meet their own needs. And he said, selling is how you do that. And I think that's what the human laboratory is really all about. How do you take your talents and turn them into a livelihood? How do you take who you are and know that in certain situations, you'll have to be a different person in front of different audiences? To what extent are you willing to do that? What are you willing to do for a buck? Everyone will have a very different answer to that. But I think that's where it becomes such an interesting subject and takes it beyond the realm of business into all our understanding of who we are as people.
Tell us about some of the great salespeople that you profile in this book.
So I started in a Moroccan souk with a rug seller called Majid El Fini, who started out selling sheepskin jackets to hippies in the 60s and is now one of the great purveyors of Moroccan carpets, rugs, tiles to hotels and movie stars and rock stars all over the world. I went to Japan. I met a life insurance saleswoman called Mrs. Shibata, who is the top saleswoman at a company called Daiichi Life, which is one of the great life insurance companies. I met a guy called Guillermo Ramirez, known as Memo, who's a Mexican contractor in Baltimore, who arrived in the United States when he was 19 and now owns a very thriving contracting business in Baltimore. And again, a terrific salesman, completely untaught, but just wonderful, with a huge array of different clients, from wealthy bankers in Baltimore to kind of 20-year-olds who have their first home. A terrific reader of people and a great enthusiast and a great manager of people.
Let me draw you out a bit about Memo, because you spend a few days with him in the book. And I found this I found your time very instructive. You begin with the fact that you really like him.
Yeah, he dragged me out of bed at 4:30 in the morning to go on a run with him, which I don't do, as a matter of course. But he does this every single morning, and he's a sort of handsome fellow. He's got long, dark hair, which keeps in a ponytail. And he said to me, he says he does this every single day, and then he comes home and he drinks his carrot juice, and then he has a large black coffee, and he hits the road in his car and starts picking up his painters and his decorators and all the people who work for him. And he says, I have to control my mood because what I do all day is so buffeted by people complaining. They want something more done. Nothing's ever enough. People want more. He said, I am the person in the middle of this who has to stay balanced and steady and alert and aware of everything. And if I get this knocked off course at any point, the whole thing goes to hell. You expect salesmen to be resilient, and he is, but he's highly conscious that he has to be consistent and constant all the time. And he has strict routines to maintain that.
Are you, because of what you've learned, easier or harder to sell things to?
Probably easier. I'm much more sympathetic to salespeople. Yeah. A lot of salespeople I met said they're terrible buyers, and I think I may be falling into that trap. Because when you start to see salespeople coming at you, you know what they're up to. They know what you're up to. You know, when the person walks away from the car, they're trying to pull this one. They're kind of trying to pretend they're not going to buy the car. And you can start to enjoy it when you realize it's that kind of a game, and you don't get too hung up on, are they telling the truth? Is this a lie? It's no more than Monopoly. That's not to say there aren't terrible sales that go on. There isn't all kinds of bad practice. There clearly is. You know, selling of subprime mortgages was appalling. And you see very, very bad behavior in sales. But I think the more you learn about it, the more you can see it as this advanced human game. And then it can be a more enjoyable experience.
Philip Delves Broughton, his new book, The Art of the Sale, Learning from the Masters About the Business of Life. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.